Hey, Austin. Howdy.
Howdy. You look like you're home.
I am back. Just got back yesterday.
Well,
Yeah.
I'm not done being jealous.
Yeah. And when are you heading out? Don't you have your event?
In about an hour and 35 minutes.
Okay. Nope, not that anyone's counting.
No, it'll be fun. I have to pick up a few last things and then good to go.
Super. Wish I were there, man, but I think I made the right decision. I am done.
No, you get people out, and it's important to have the recharge time. Jeff, Nick, Katie, Bonnie, Diane, Stephanie, good to see you all.
Yeah, good to see everybody here.
And I want you all to know I expect to see tears today. Okay, I'm just going to set that expectation in advance. But any wins from this past week? Any new insights? Any gut punches? I mean, we can go there too.
Let us know in the chat area, guys. We'd love to hear what's going on. And again, wins could be any kind of forward momentum. You
Nick sold
sell
a
the content
conference.
strategy. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Tennessee Spirit Fingers coming at you live, Nick. That's
I love
great.
it.
We may have to put him on a little hot seat later.
Who else? Who's making progress? Insights, breakthroughs, moving forward. Got your juicy offer done. Having conversations. Anything along those lines? Let us know in the chat area. Stephanie says, my meeting got moved next week and offering a session to a new potential client. She is excited. Or, well, both are excited. Yeah, there you go. Good stuff. Becky says, I just binged sessions 3 to 6 this morning, so I'm behind, but I do know which offers seem appealing. Great. Love it,
Thank you for
Becky.
your honesty, Becky. Appreciate the honesty. I have been there, certainly. I found in college, if I was ill prepared for a class, the best thing to do was to be the first person to ask a question or chime in. And then it was like the pressure was off for the rest of the class,
I have a coaching client who just did her first strategy workshop yesterday. It was a content strategy workshop. She was so nervous going into it. We had several calls because she didn't feel she was quite prepared. And then she just went in yesterday and she reported back. It's like, it went amazing. I feel so great. And said they responded really, really well to me. I had better recommendations than I thought I would. And he said, and I now have the confidence to offer more of these. So this is from someone again who went into this really, really scared that she wasn't going to be able to add value, that her recommendations were going to be kind of not very well received. And she is ecstatic. So
Yeah,
don't hold back.
that's been my experience too, being anxious up front that, and I mentioned this in session 6, almost feeling like I was showing up for an audition and that people were waiting for me to fail. And then I got there and instead found that they were relieved and excited and maybe hadn't even put much thought into this since they paid for it and were kind of just a blank slate when they showed up. And we got them any amount of clarity at all, that was better than what they came in with.
There you go. Katie says, my win is keeping up with sessions and more clarity on which one is going to be good for me. Excellent. Clarity is good. Jeff, pitch a guest presentation, which will involve strategy consulting concepts to a sales coach trainer putting on a masterclass, and he wants to go ahead with it. I'll do a mini session. Look at you.
Come on. That's great. And I'm glad that you brought up that word trainer, Jeff. Sometimes if you are presenting, it's not a whole lot different than strategy in that you're selling your perspective and your ideas and your advice. But I have multiple coaching clients who do more training than they do what I would call strategy engagements. It's very similar, except it's more presentation style. So some of you, that could be a really good fit, right? Like one client of mine, her name is Kate. She does a lot with thought leadership, particularly helping executives become more active on LinkedIn. And so she's just presenting the concepts and then it's up to them to run with them. So that is a whole other flavor. That could be strategy flavor number 10, I guess. Training.
Yeah. Deb says, I've created flavors for business stories discovery, 3-hour sprint, buyer persona discovery, 1-hour sprint, discovery thought leadership road mapping, ideation brainstorming sprint, discover your customer language workshop. Look at you, Deb, overachiever.
Love it. I love
good
it.
Stuff.
And I right. like the modular approach because sometimes you're going to bundle all these up into a bigger engagement and sell that at one price. Sometimes a client doesn't have that kind of budget and they need to buy from you a la carte. And so both approaches are valid, right? Just kind of depends on right sizing the engagement for their budget. Anyway, sorry to interrupt, Ed.
No, it's Diane said, I'm way behind, husband very ill. Sorry to hear that, Diane. Hope he's on the mend. But I will likely start with some sort of editing offer as an easy way to start. There you go, guys. You know, sometimes when in doubt or when you're overwhelmed, ask yourself, what would be the easiest thing to do? You know, Austin, you like to ask that question a lot. And I love that because it's a very nice reframe when someone is overwhelmed. It's like, okay, great. All those are great ideas. And, you know, but it sounds like you're really, really overwhelmed. What would be the easiest thing to do? And sometimes that can give you easiest way to start. Yeah. What if it were easy? There you go. That's wonderful. Start there. We're not, you know, look, you're not trying to set the world on fire. You're just trying to get started. That first step is absolutely key. Deb says, I just contacted a client for content. They replied asking if I would refresh and update their blogs instead. Okay. Good stuff. All right, guys. Well, let's get going on questions. If you need feedback, want to talk through anything, we're here for you. You know the drill by now. Just put in a capital Q in the chat area and give us one sentence what you've got. Make sure you have a question formulated. We'll bring you in. We'll have a conversation. We can talk through whatever you've got, however we can help you. It's an open flow right now, so don't be shy. If you've got something, let us know. Jump right in.
So while you all are putting together your stunningly insightful questions, I want to speak quickly to something Deb said. A lot of the plans or reports that I will deliver after a strategy session are basic in concept in that they follow this principle of double down on what's already working, right? And I've found that a lot of clients haven't actually slowed down to measure what is already working. They may have not had good analytics in place. They may not have logged into Google Analytics or Google Search Console or Ahrefs or whatever in months. So Deb, one option, and you may have already considered this, is if they're like, hey, we need to refresh and update our blogs. You're like, great. But the best way to get started is for us to tune up your content strategy. And so we need to take a look at what's already working, which posts are getting the most traffic. If you get into Google Search Console, you know, which queries are actually bringing traffic to the blog. If it's a social situation, you're like, let's go and review your last 100 posts and create an aggregate score for each one based on total engagements. Engagements, you know, depending on the platform, can be likes, comments, shares, saves, that sort of thing. So you can come up with that aggregate score. And I'm telling you, I've never had a client that already had all those insights collected so that they were able to tell me, here's what our top performing posts are. Here are the topics or ideas represented by them. Here are 10 to 20 ways we could take this same idea and repurpose it, either with a different post format, a different post container or type, right? Instead of inspirational, we're going to do listicle. Instead of listicle, we're going to do strategy breakdown. So those of you who are already doing content writing, copywriting, just helping them analyze what they've already got is a strategy session of itself. And the one I think I mentioned last week that I'm kicking off, we had the kickoff call yesterday. They literally have no idea what their best performing blog posts are. And they've been putting out up to 12 per month for 2 years. And they've not in once in 2 years gone back and said, what do people seem to want from us? Right. So in Deb's situation, hey, let's help you figure out what people want more of from you. And that's the way we're going to start, right? Because some blog posts will not be worth carrying forward, optimizing, updating. You should just leave them be. Anyway, I see we've got a couple of questions. Becky, sorry, this is from session 5. No worries, Becky. But curious why you deliver a draft report before the final designed report. Maybe, can you restate the question?
Yeah, I was just watching, you kind of gave at the end of session 5, you gave a little, like walked us through one of your things, and in it, you first delivered kind of like a Word or Google Doc, and then you said, and then here I, you know, next comes the nice designed report. So I was just kind of curious why you sent over the Google or Word doc or whatever first. You called it a draft in the session. So I didn't know if you were actually asking for their input or if you were just kind of like, you know, this is just a quick, like, here's all the details in case you want it right now, but I'm going to design this and make it look nice and I'll get that to you in a week kind of thing. I was just curious what was going on there.
So I usually do either or. And when I deliver a report, I'll deliver it in a form that I'm ready to call finished. Because a report is a report. It's not something I really need their feedback on, right? There are a few exceptions. For example, if I'm delivering like a brand strategy, I'll go ahead and send them the content in a Google Doc because there's a chance they may add to it themselves later, right? And then the decision about whether or not to deliver something that could look pretty unfinished or unimpressive in a Google Doc versus one of the design templates that I have that are branded in InDesign, I make that decision based on the relationship with the client, right?
Okay, like, so in that case, you would have sent them the Google Doc so they could add to it if they wanted, but then you sent them a final designed one so they'd have kind of like a nice packaged up report, is that?
Yeah, and it's a little bit of showmanship or showwomanship, right? Because I think the client experience is enhanced if they get this beautiful artifact at the end. Honestly, sometimes I get kind of lazy and I just don't want to bother. So I know that I should probably make the effort every time. But I do have certain clients that I know they don't place a high value on design finish or production quality. And if that's the case, I just send them the Google Doc and that suffices because they're so biased to action. They just want it so that they can move forward with it immediately. So if you've got a good read on your client, you know whether or not the extra effort you put into like a prettier report is actually going to be interpreted as value on their end. A lot of my clients, it's not like they've got like really great taste in terms of branding or design anyway. So I know when I can get away with not doing that. Does that help?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Cool. All right. Nick, I've agreed to do a 3-hour content road mapping session with a client, combination of its brand identity, messaging, and a 6-month plan for content, including 10 to 15 ideas. That sounds like a great scope. Client is also keen for me to provide regular blog writing, which I'm not sure I want to commit to yet. How do I put that on hold? Great question, Nick. You know, you could say, hey, based on the ideas that we come up with for your 6-month plan, I'll feel great about writing some of those. I may not feel great about writing others. Whether or not I'm your guy, I can point you in the right direction, right? So, you know, they're coming to you to help them solve a problem, and you can help them solve that problem, even if you're not going to be their ghostwriter or their blog writer. And that's why I always have, this might've come up in a past session, I have a Google spreadsheet that I just call freelance roster. And in it, I have a tab for each discipline, you know, SEO writing, blogging, copywriting, web design, identity design. And when I find people whose work I respect, I just add them to my roster. And that way, when a client needs a referral from me, I have 3 easy recommendations I can make right away. And I even have some email templates that I will use to say, I'm not your guy, but here are 3 people to contact instead. So I think you can just explain, let's hold off on any commitments about me becoming your writer until after the session. That's the short answer.
That makes sense, Nick.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks. I mean, I don't want to sound ungrateful, but to the client, but it's just, I want to sort of do less writing. And I also approach, as I'm still working journalist, writing from a journalist perspective, and end up spending more time on it than usual. And I think there's a kind of limit in the market for how much I can charge for blogs. Mm-hmm. And I think they also want me to get involved in maybe sort of commissioning other writers. And at the moment, yeah, I just want to, I'm kind of excited about doing this, probably be next month, this 3-hour, and it'd be a virtual mm-hmm. content road mapping workshop. But I'll be quite nervous about that. And I just want to focus mm-hmm. on that really, rather than getting into the weeds of committing to content. And
mm-hmm. I mean, another option you have is to offer them the consolation prize of, I'm happy to write the first 2 for a fixed fee for each. Mm-hmm. And then that will give other writers that, you know, I can even help you recruit, an idea of what you're going for. So you're like, hey, you know, this is sort of part of your editorial guidelines. Here are posts that we really like that just happen to have been written by Nick Huber, right? So I would just keep that card in your back pocket. And if the conversation starts to get kind of weird because of your reluctance to be their writer, then you can just say, well, hey, let me commit to writing the first 2.
Yeah, thank you.
One of the things that I love about this is that it's very modular. And in fact, it can remain completely separate, right? It's like, let's tackle this first. And then at that point, we can have a discussion about, you know, how to proceed from there, right? So instead of kind of joining them together and discussing the whole thing, you're tackling one at a time. And then at the end, you can, it's almost like if you were a very well-known chef and you got brought into this restaurant to help them design the menu, you know, you don't necessarily need to then go ahead and cook the meals, right? It's like, look, I'll show you what you need to do. Everything will be detailed, and, you know, you guys can take it from here.
And to some degree, if you start combining strategy with a longer implementation engagement, it defeats the purpose of using strategy to actually vet the client, right? Because I have gotten on the other side of a strategy engagement and thought, I really don't want to be the one responsible for writing for this client. I might not have enjoyed the interaction with them very much. I'm still delivering the report, holding up my end of the bargain. But yeah, you bring up a good point, Ed. Just keep the two decoupled if you can.
Stephanie's question about the download, the template that I shared last week. Yes. So Stephanie, it's my breakthrough engagement kind of standard template. And I put it in under session two. And it's there because I wanted to kind of keep it with the other sample report templates. And that's in session two at the very bottom. I just checked in and my team got it up there for you guys.
Look for Ed's lazy report template.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to find it, right?
Ed is there, but I don't see lazy anywhere in the. Yeah.
No, Ed, your template is proof positive that, you know, you don't have to have high design value. It's just give them what they paid for, right? With really actionable advice.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, Becky, back when you had a team, did you position it as you did the strategy work and then if hired for the content that would come from your team with you overseeing it? Yes, Becky, exactly. A lot of the time, certain team members of mine would be at the strategy sessions, and that helped just with continuity. They would have all the context, right? But I, as much as possible, tried to stay out of implementation.
And that didn't bother your clients. They saw like where your role was and, you know, they weren't looking to you to implement. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, now, depending on how long you've had a relationship with these clients, you need to be very careful. They don't feel like they've been handed off or delegated. And that is just sort of like, you can manage that in different ways where you as the business owner or agency principal, even just checking in with them from time to time to say, how are you? So there are other ways to make clients feel cared for beyond you being like the project manager or account executive overseeing every detail of their project.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great questions today. Let's see. Less writing will be the best. Okay, Deb, flavor one, discovery project road mapping. Is it best to advertise most ideas in the bucket except for branding and brainstorming and break out your ideas in this bucket? Deb, why don't you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Okay. Hi, Austin. Hi, Ed and everybody. The reason that I broke my ideas out was that I wasn't quite clear on like the discovery project road mapping versus some of the others, because I know that it looks like there is some overlap. Is it easier for marketing purposes and for your client to understand like one discovery project road mapping than how I broke mine out?
So I use discovery or paid discovery or project road mapping or even a wayfinding workshop when a client comes to me and they say like, we want to work with you. And usually they know about a skill set that I have, like writing or branding. They're like, we want to work with you. And then during the initial discovery call, maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes, I realize that they've got a budget, but they're not clear on how to spend it. And it could go 17 different directions. And I don't want to invest a ton of time on the front end trying to put together this comprehensive proposal that adds a lot of color in detail for all of their needs. And so instead of creating a big beefy proposal for free, I offer them, and Ed, I mean, this would be, I think, one of the interventions. Like, this is a place kind of on that diagram, that really cool diagram you have, where it's like, they're a little bit disorganized, or they seem scattered, or they're just not, they don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And I like have that moment, which is normally like, oh, like that feeling in your gut where you're just like, it could take hours to pull out all the necessary information from them before I even have the project that I can pin a price to. And so I used to do that probably first 5 or 6 years of freelancing, where I'm like, and you know, it's like this goodwill investment in the relationship. I have to put together a proposal in order to get a yes from them. But sometimes those proposals ended in no's, and I came up empty handed. So it's paid discovery is for a very specific kind of client who has wide ranging needs, doesn't have clarity, and really just needs to put together a plan for how they're going to spend a branding or marketing or writing budget over the next 3 to 6 months. And my promise to them is like, hey, when I send you the report after this project roadmapping session, that's going to have standalone value apart from whether or not you choose to hire me to help you execute the plan. But like, I think you need some help just creating a plan. And then at the end of your report, you know, that's when you can sort of slide in your proposal and be like, by the way, if you want me to be the person to do 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, here's what that's going to cost. Right. So there, I look at paid discovery as a very specific tool for a client who has budget. They're just not sure how to spend it. So that's a little bit different than some of the I'll call them workshops, the workshops that you shared, because those, the outcome is clear from the beginning. Hey, if you do this workshop with me, then you will get your customer persona at the end. And someone won't buy that unless they already know that they need customer persona, right? Now, I don't mean to like muddy the waters, but some clients may know that they need customer persona, and that may eat up 25% of their budget, but they have 75% of their budget left over, and they're like, how do we spend that? So don't be afraid to combine some paid discovery or project roadmapping with this other module. I think, Ed, that was your word, modular, or maybe you use that with Nick, but you can have sort of these modules that you're able to bolt on to paid discovery as needed. So I really do think about all of my strategy offers as a menu that I have. As I listen to a client and figure out what their problems are, what their opportunities are, I may pick 1, 2, and 3, or just 1 and 2, or just 1. It just kind of depends on each specific situation. And sometimes if I want a client to go away, I'll just offer them paid discovery, because I'm like, it's overwhelming to even be in conversation with you. And like, I just need to throw this out there to know whether you're serious or not. Right. Does that help?
It does. Yeah. So, basically it's almost like you have the discovery project roadmapping. And then you have the wayfinding workshop, which the workshops then would be what I listed here, the wayfinding workshops.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, those would be considered wayfinding workshops, right?
So don't like, I'll try not to let you get like caught up in semantics. Wayfinding is just the word that I use for roadmapping. It was just, I liked the two W's, wayfinding workshop, the alliteration, right? Not alliteration. That would be consonants, or is it alliteration? Doesn't matter. anyway, I That's just my terminology, but it's paid discovery. That's what it is. And I just differentiate paid discovery from other types of strategy sessions that have a very specific outcome. Hey, when you buy this from me, you're getting a marketing plan. When you buy this from me, you're getting your positioning statement. When you buy this from me, you're getting your customer avatar or archetype. Oh, but when you buy paid discovery from me, we don't know where we're going to end up. I just know that by the end of the session, I'm going to have a plan for you. And that's where I have those open-ended questions like, you know, what are your biggest challenges right now? And what are your goals? And what is causing you heartburn? And okay, how are you going to solve that? And so often all I'm doing in paid discovery is asking questions to pull everything out of them, asking more clarifying questions to help. Okay, what is the best path forward? I don't have to be the genius originating all the solutions as much as I need to take all that stuff that they throw at me and help them organize that into an action plan.
And so when you're talking, let's say, to a cold client, then you're just giving them the questionnaire so you can kind of fish around and see where they might fit, whether it's a paid discovery session or it's an individual like branding or customer language or something like that.
Right. So if you've got an inquiry coming in and it's a new prospect and you don't have a relationship with them, you send them an intake questionnaire before the free discovery call. And the intake questionnaire will give you some idea going into the free discovery call what their problems are. And sometimes they're, you know, dead set on, hey, we need you to like just refresh some of our blog posts. But sometimes if, you know, you word your questions and your intake questionnaire appropriately, you realize, well, their needs are actually wider than that. And this would be a good time, you know, looking at Ed's diagram, oh, this would be a good time to actually pitch them on, let me help you get some clarity around what's most important right now. I'd like to sell you a project. I just want to make sure that I'm selling you a project relevant to your most pressing needs.
Okay.
Yeah, by the way, I've uploaded this to session one. Best entry points for strategy offer. And so you guys can, and it's updated after, you know, you've seen the evolution of this diagram from our first session to now. But the one thing I wanted to point out is we added some of these other things that we talked about last week, all the way to the very end. But just to Deb's point, discovery, project road mapping, paid discovery, that kind of fits here at the beginning, right? And it could fit somewhere in here as well if you direct the prospect or the client in different directions, when you can say, I see what you're going with this, I see how you're thinking about it, I suggest that we take a different direction here. And let me explain why. So it could come into play here, but notice that this half of the diagram, they've already identified an intervention, you know, so the question is it effective or not? But project road mapping is going to be typically, right, Austin, earlier in this cycle or process.
Yeah, I would, and I know we need to move on, but I would say two things. One, I was uncomfortable with the thought that this conversation with this particular prospect could just keep on going and they're going to keep asking to meet and they're going to keep wanting more of my time because they don't know what they want. And they love basically being able to meet with me to try to figure out what it is they want, right? Treating me like a business therapist. And I did it enough early on where I just got worn out with giving away my time for free. And so that's
the first scenario where I was just like, this seems like this could drag on for a while before it culminates in a proposal, if it ever will, right? The second scenario is they come to me saying, hey, we think we want this. But as I get more information from them, either through an intake questionnaire or during the free discovery call, I start to believe that the intervention or the plan or the plan of attack that they've decided on is going to lead to disappointing results for them. And I can't in good conscience say, great, when do we start? Because I actually think it's a bad plan, right? And I can't in good conscience say, oh, for sure, we should absolutely write these 12 blog posts, when I'm like, these are bad ideas. They're boring, or this has been done 1,000 times before. It's hackneyed, it's cliche, right? So you, when you have that catch in your spirit, you just feel uneasy about running forward with this idea or project or plan that they gave you, that's when I will pitch something like paid discovery, because I'm like, let's make sure that the project we're about to embark upon together is the real project. And sometimes they go for it, sometimes they don't, but I didn't want to put myself in more situations where I was just an order taker when I thought that a plan was doomed. I think that makes sense.
It does. Thank you.
Ed, I love the evolution of that diagram. It's been fun.
Yeah. For visual people like myself, I had to map it out. So I hope it's helpful for others. And again, it's under session one if you want to download it and take a look at it and keep it as a reference.
All right.
It's like Stephanie's next.
Okay, let's see. So for my client next week, we will brainstorm and plan her strategy. I would like to offer 15 ideas for blog posts based on shifting her services, identifying their needs, pain points, but I do not want to do the writing. So when the client is unsure of what has been most engaging, what do you suggest they do to get this information? So they haven't sort of validated their best ideas yet. They don't know what's going to resonate with their audience. A couple of things that you can do, and I know we've discussed these in past sessions, so I'll try to be fast. You can use something like SimilarWeb or Ahrefs to see which posts are generating the most traffic for your client's closest competitors. Right? You can use something like BuzzSumo, sign up for a free trial, type in some of the topics that the client wants to write about. And if you do enough searches, then you'll be able to see, okay, a topic that is trending right now for this accounting firm is, you know, sort of IRA backdoors, right? Like, what is a mega Roth in the US and what's a good strategy? Like, you can use BuzzSumo to surface good ideas, because BuzzSumo will tell you, here are really popular ideas on topics based on engagement numbers. Oh, wow, if this got 15,000 shares or retweets on Twitter, yeah, then my client could write something similar, right? You can go to Reddit, and particularly subreddits, and look for the most upvoted comments in subreddits and read them and just be like, why did this seem to resonate? This comment on this topic, why did it resonate? And that's another place to come up with good ideas, right? Google Trends. Hey, you know, my client is an e-commerce company that sells sneakers. Right? I could go there. And then there are obviously some paid sources too. Like, you could, if the client's industry
has specific industry associations or newsletters or podcasts that kind of everyone in the industry always they all know about these top resources, right? You can go to those top resources and just deduce after you look around for a little while what has been popular here. So again, it's the same sort of principle. Can I figure out what's already popular and then help my client do a really fresh riff on that, a remix of that? So in my space, people are always interested in like pricing, like freelance pricing, like how do I put a price tag on my services, right? I could have my take on that, and I do have my take on that. And the same goes with like, oh, like what's going to happen with AI? You know, is artificial intelligence going to put freelance writers out of business? So I could write a perspective piece on like, no, like, you know, so you get where I'm going, right? There, after a while, you develop your own bag of tricks for how do I go find ideas when my clients don't already have data or analytics that they can use.
Austin, another one we talked about was, especially in a B2B situation, asking the sales team, right? Going to the sales team, nice. What are the biggest objections you get, the biggest reframes you're constantly having to do when talking with prospects, and the biggest questions you get?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with customer service, customer support, again, in a B2B setting or in a B2B, B2C situation, very, mm-hmm. very important. Because those are things that keep coming up. Misconceptions, objections, questions, reframes. Mm-hmm. All those are super, super valuable. Less objective in nature, but extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm. That's really good, Ed. And you brought up one other idea, which is case studies. A lot of, especially B2B companies, they need more case studies than they have. And just asking, hey, you know, have you all had any like success stories recently with certain clients? Because why wouldn't you write those? I mean, the sales team would be thrilled if they actually had up-to-date case studies too. So does that help, Stephanie? Good. Okay, Nick, how long could this paid discovery be? 1.5 hours or longer. So I doubt you all remember this, but in the very first webinar that Ed and I did to even invite you all to buy this program, I gave you like the entire price progression. So I can tell you exactly, the very first one I sold was $500 US. And then I upped the price, I think it was $625. And then I think it was $1,000, $1,500, $2,500, $3,500. Now with the $3,500, I normally expand it to 3 hours. And we're just able to tackle a lot more in 3 hours. But if you're doing a 90-minute paid discovery session, Nick, you tell me, what amount of money would you feel great about making for that right now?
For 90 minutes, maybe about $2,000, $1,500. For the client that I'm doing this 3-hour content roadmap in, I've agreed just over $3,000, which I think is reasonable because it's going to be at least a day research. Mm-hmm. And a day doing it. So maybe about for 90 minutes, 2,000 or fit. I wouldn't want to do less than 1,500.
So, I think. Yeah, Ed, I like Ed's rule of thumb, split the difference, right? I don't want to put words in your mouth, Ed. What would you say?
Yeah. So the floor, the absolute minimum you would be willing, the level that starts making you sweat and your voice break. Take the average and go slightly higher. You want the third quartile, somewhere in that third quartile, essentially.
And here's the thing, strategically, it's much better to come in higher. And then they're like, oh, that's too much, or we're just not prepared to spend that. And then you say, well, what are you prepared to spend on clarity? And then they may say, oh, well, we could do 7:50. You're like, great, let's do a 45-minute session for 7:50. So if they come down on the price, then you dial back the scope and you talk it out until you're both happy. But if you start low, it's harder to come down. So I like starting a little bit higher so that there are still ways to negotiate and both parties see it as a win.
Thank you.
Bonnie, I'm coming at this course from a slightly different perspective because I'm a technical editor instead of a copywriter. Both strategy consulting and tech editing seem to require the same deep listening and guidance skills. Really good insight, Bonnie. That's true. I'm thinking of offering my in-person Zoom time with subject matter experts as a strategy session to differentiate it from my quiet solo editing time. It might help clients understand that just hashing through a document at breakneck speed with me on a Zoom call isn't in fact going to be the most effective way to edit their content. It's helpful for them to clarify their ideas, but after that, the document still needs to be edited. Does that sound reasonable? Do you have any top of mind advice for approaching this as an editor? So I like this idea. It's like a mixture of developmental editing and almost like thought leadership coaching, because you're right in that just like sometimes the refinement of ideas takes time and editing at a breakneck speed doesn't actually serve them. So I do think that you could find the right framing, and I'll be curious to hear what Ed thinks about this, but you could find the right framing so that you are helping them, you're approaching the document and saying, sort of like, what's the thesis? Like, what is the structure? How are you supporting that thesis? How are we shaping and developing this manuscript so that it's doing the job you want it to do? And then meanwhile, hey, as an expert, I'm going to tell you what I think are your best ideas here. I'm going to tell you where I see the energy and interest really picking up in this manuscript. Like, here's where I was like, lean forward because I was interested, and here's where you lost me. So Bonnie, I definitely think that's a good possibility. And you could call it manuscript coaching, thought leadership coaching. Hey, I'm a development editor and I'll also just get on a live call with you. I mean, shoot, like comments on Google Docs can only get us so far. Sometimes to meet with someone and that person just tell us, here's why this doesn't work, is faster and more effective, much more valuable. Ed, what do you think?
I couldn't have said it better. What came to mind was, you know, if I were to meet with a winery and they're like, look, our vineyards need help. You know, we just know they need help. But rather than going straight to the vineyard and start pruning, you sit with them and figure out what they're trying to accomplish. What are the problems? Where do you want to go? What obstacles are you facing, you know, along the way, and come up with a plan and then go in there and start pruning, which would be the editing, right? So Bonnie, does that help?
Yeah, that is really helpful. Thanks everybody. It's Austin dropping the developmental editing makes me really feel like he does actually know what I'm asking, which is great, because so many people think, well, that's not a thing. Editing only comes at the end of a project. And so much of it can be done strategically ahead of time to set a writer up for success that will require less sturm und drang at the end. Mm-hmm. So that's all really helpful. Thanks, everybody.
One final thought or one piece of gratitude. Thank you for saying sturm und drang. I need more of that in my life. German was my minor. That just fills me with gladness. But, you know, you could have a really cool checklist of questions that you're like, hey, listen, I don't actually feel comfortable diving into a manuscript until I get from the writer definitive answers to these 17 questions. Who is your target audience? What matters to them? If you could leave them with, like, if you could send them away from this manuscript or this project knowing one thing or believing one thing, what would it be? And it's almost like a project brief. Like if I were like helping someone write a white paper or case study, you know, I have that list of questions that I need them to answer. Otherwise, it's just likely that the, like, strategically, the project's going to be weak. So what questions would have to be answered before you would be satisfied and even feel comfortable, like, diving in? And back to Ed's analogy, you start to prune the vines, you start to walk amongst the rows, you start to actually bring health to individual plants, right? So yes. I wouldn't be surprised if there's an opportunity here for you to develop some intellectual property around, you know, the 17 questions that have to be answered before your technical document is ready for an editor, that kind of thing.
Great. Yeah. Because as a technical editor, it's not my job to go in knowing the full technical specs of something. It's my job to help someone who does know that translate that into readable language.
Well, I'm not a technical editor. I've never been a technical writer, but I do know that I've edited much longer manuscripts of other types, and I get to page 15 and I'm still not sure what the manuscript is about. I'm like, okay, we didn't have the same high school English classes here with, like, you know, thesis statements, topic sentences, smooth transitions. And I try not to talk down to somebody, but I feel like, hey, let's go ahead and have, like, freshman English class here.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. So you're probably dealing with some technical writers who English wasn't necessarily their strongest subject in high school.
Yeah. Anyway. And often not their first language, which is another fun way to go about it. It's really neat to see how people use language in so many different ways.
I have a client who is a coach. She lives in Tennessee the same way I do. She works with a lot of scientists and engineers who come to work at Oak Ridge National Laboratory.
Fantastic.
English is a second or third or fourth language for them. And yet a lot of them need to present papers and otherwise publish to further their careers.
Yep.
So what she does with some of her coaching is she'll have, like, hey, if you observe, like, these 20 grammar rules, then you're sort of mitigating your own embarrassment in, like, 80% of situations you may face as a public speaker or writer. So that's another thing that you could develop just as a little piece of coaching. If you have ESL clients, just here are the main grammatical things, sentence structure, that sort of thing that you need to pay attention to cover yourself. But great question.
Thanks, everybody.
Bonnie. All right, Katie, can you drop the name of the first two sites you mentioned for seeing which blog posts were best for clients or competitors here? So I think I mentioned SimilarWeb. Capital S, capital W, similar web, and BuzzSumo, capital B, capital S. Is that right? Were those the first two? Anyone who took notes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Cool. And there are lots more that you could go explore, right? Like if you're into, if your client's a technological company, you know, Y Combinator, what is it called? Hacker News. Like there are some very specific publications and sites that cater to a very specific market segment, which are wonderful for research and coming up with ideas, but it's different for like every industry, right? Let's see. I just had this come up on a website I did. Okay. Yeah. They need more case studies. For three times this year, I've charged $3,000 for a case study. So that's another form of copywriting that is much closer to the money that I think a lot more writers
could focus on. It's like, how much can you get paid for a 1500 word blog post? Probably not 3K, but a long form narrative case study. Absolutely, you can get paid 3K. Let's see. Have we made it to the end?
Yeah, I don't see any other new questions. If we missed you, please let us know. Just type in your big, just give us a Q, capital Q in front of it so we can easily identify it and let us know. One thing I wanted to, while we're waiting, Austin, I'm going to mention the kind of the summary document you put together.
Oh, okay? Cool. Do it. Yes, please.
Yeah. So we're going to be uploading this, should be up there by tomorrow, but in session 6. So just FYI, it's going to be there. Austin's put together this really awesome cheat sheet. And in fact, let me pull it up and show you guys what you'll see here. Here I am talking and didn't even have it ready. On really kind of a, hey, all right, I'm here, I'm overwhelmed. How do I... can you net this out for me? You know, I'm going to review some of the stuff on my own. That's fine. But I need kind of a summary of this workshop. So let me pull this up. I got it. How to sell strategy, just an overview, 20-step cheat sheet. And it's just, it's a really nice summary of what we've covered. The, you know, strategy flavors. Anyway, so thought this would be a really nice way to kind of bookend things here and then have a nice reference document you can use to come back to and keep handy. So anyway, that's going to be uploaded under session 6, hopefully by tomorrow. I just sent it to my team today to put up there.
Nice. All right. All right. I'm going to start calling names. We've gotten to that point. Okay, Bonnie, is the client for case studies usually someone in the sales department? Depends on, it's usually someone in marketing asking on behalf of someone in sales. But it also just depends on the size of the client and the nature of their business. The two I'm working on right now, well, I'm working directly with the founder and principal of a software development agency. And, you know, one of the case studies that I'm working on, I know for a fact because the client's client told me that they'd spent £250,000 with the client this year. So for them to charge, or for me to charge them 3K for a project that another project that's similar could net them $250,000, right? It's like a no-brainer. So yeah, smaller organization, you're working directly with the founder or principal or whoever. Larger organization, you're working with a marketing director or maybe a sales manager.
All right, great, thanks.
All right, Nick, invoicing. On order of invoicing, pre-strategy offer questions for clients. Can you clarify, Nick?
Yeah, sure. So it's about this strategy offer content roadmapping, which I'm hopefully going to do with this client, which is a kind of medium-sized UK recruitment company. And I only had the call earlier today, but then it's emailed and said it's super keen to start. And it wants me to send it questions. What I think it means is questions which will help clarify what we cover in the course. Like I've already sent it a questionnaire before the first discovery call. Mm-hmm. And now, but what my question is, it wants to move quite fast, but we haven't agreed a date for the course. And I know yours and in my offer I said, right, in the order of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the fee paid up front. And normally I just ask for 50%, but I thought, you know, what the hell? 100% of the fee paid up front. So should I say to it, because I'm going to be on holiday at a business conference on next Monday, should I say before emailing these kind of pre-course questionnaire, which will help flesh out the workshop, should I say, first of all, can we agree a date for the course and can you pay my invoice or can I invoice you? Or I'm just worried, thinking about the order.
Don't stress it too much, right? Okay. But I'll tell you the order that I typically have. And here's the thing, sometimes the order gets scrambled and that's okay. And I've never had a client stiff me for one of these. And not only that, I've never had a client that if I sent them these questions in advance, they're like, no, we've got your questions mm-hmm. now. We don't need the session, right? So I typically will have some kind of not intake questionnaire, but they're saying, we want to work with you. Let's move forward. Send the invoice. Send those pre-work or onboarding questions. Put the date in the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they've paid up and once they've answered the questions, there are two paths, right? Either we go straight to the session or I submit to them an agenda. Hey, based on what you said would be the most valuable use of our time together, I think we should spend an hour on this with the outcome being this. We should spend 30 minutes on this. Actually, I'll just show you. You want me just to show you?
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got a brand sprint coming up. Let me pull it up. Next week, next Tuesday. And then let's see. What are their names? A lot has happened. Okay, a lot has happened.
While you looked that up, Austin, real quick. So it's interesting because I do it a little differently, and I don't think there's any right or wrong. It's just what feels right to you. I actually send the invoice and payment link first. Once that's completed, then that unleashes everything else. Great. Here's the diagnostic questionnaire. Here's a link to book our session, uh-huh. You know, on a calendar. And, you know, here's some stuff to go ahead and start prepping or whatever, right? So to me, I like to have that as a very easy, simple one step. Because mm-hmm. I think, in my opinion, the more things you send them, the more overwhelmed some, oh, there's mm-hmm. a lot. Okay, we got to do a few things here. Let me just, I'll deal with this later. As opposed mm-hmm. to, let's do this thing first. And then once that's done, boom, here's everything else. Because mm-hmm. The other thing too is and this is for my coaching business and consulting. I don't want to book a day or an afternoon or even a couple of hours until I've had payment. Because there have been many times when I do that, I block it. And then this thing is like, you know, like they're just not moving.
Mm-hmm.
And then I booked that time. And now I'm wondering, is this thing even going to happen? And now I haven't, there's an opportunity cost of not using that time for that day. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
that's a great point. And as you get closer to the day you've booked, but haven't paid for or the session, you're like, you get more and more nervous. You're like, I don't really want to keep this meeting until they pay. So, yeah. And Ed, you bring up a really good point, which is part of the value that you're delivering is not overwhelming them with everything that they need to do. So sometimes it's good to just say, here's the very next step, or at most like the next two steps, right? Hey, here's that invoice link again. And then once you pay the invoice, then we'll pick out a date. And then once you pick out the date, then I'll send you the onboarding questions or the prep or pre-work questions, right? I will say that like when I send the invoice, some people are weird about money and I get that. So like if I kind of feel like it's going to be too pushy with a certain client to not agree to a date before they pay the invoice,
I still will just kind of go with my gut sometimes, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But so just some context, this is a 1-day brand sprint. They paid $3,375. After they paid, then I said, here's a time that we can get together. And because this is a brand sprint and there are 20 different pieces of their brand that we could work on together, I want to send you my onboarding questionnaire for brand sprints. And that will give me some idea of the best way we could use our time together. So they answered those questions. And then after they answered those questions, we got on a 1-hour call. And during the 1-hour call, we discussed their questions. And then my job after the call was to put together the agenda for the day itself. So this email is, they agreed to work with me. They paid the invoice. They answered the questions. I read the questions. We scheduled the call. I call it a kickoff call. And then I email them afterwards and I'm like, here is the agenda that I propose based on your answers to the onboarding questionnaire and based on our conversation during the kickoff call, right? And then you notice that it's like, here's when we're going to start. Here's when we're going to break. Here's when we're going to, and by the way, you all feel free to take a screenshot of this if it's helpful. I don't care, right? Like, it's just an agenda, right? But here's exactly how much time I think we'll need to do some of these things that you said that you wanted. And then I'm like, you'll notice at the top, I'm like, it may actually be kind of hard to see. I'm like, do you think this would be a good use of our time and your money? Let me know what changes, if any, you'd like to make. And there was a little bit of back and forth conversation. And then, as sometimes happens, another decision maker who wasn't a part of any prior conversations comes out of the woodwork, wants to have a say, introduces some lingo, success statements. And I'm like, oh, that's cute. I'm going to be having none of your success statements. Thank you very much. Because you're totally misunderstanding the goal of the session. He's a really nice guy. I know his brother. He's just, I think, a little bit overeager. Anyway, so now we actually have the date in the calendar. They said yes to this agenda. I put the date in the calendar for next Tuesday. We're good to go. And when we show up, we already have this agenda. I'll post it during the session. When they get off the rails, as inevitably happens, I'll use the agenda to pull us back. No, this is what we're here to accomplish today. So hopefully that helps. There's a pretty linear order of events here. And I think the best rule of thumb is exactly what Ed said. Don't put the session in your calendar until the client pays.
That's good advice, thanks. Because I think the client's fairly trustworthy, but I've been burned before by company, you know, promising things to companies and then it changes.
You've been very responsive and professional, and then they don't reciprocate. You know, and it's just, that's awkward. Professionalism flows both ways. Okay, Bonnie. Well, no, we already answered that one. I think that's it, the end of the questions. Wait, Deb, did we miss one about pricing? I'm trying to figure out pricing engagement. Is this the right idea? Up toward the top.
Yeah, you know what? I was just trying to figure out the different options of like 3-hour, 2-day versus 1-day versus 90 minute versus 30 to 60 minutes. So I kind of gathered what you guys were talking about before, and I guess this is close. I think I was just a little low on some things. So, but that would be the breakdown though, right? The breakthrough sessions, 30 to 60 minutes. The road mapping is more like 90 minutes, and the sprints are either 2-day, 3 hours, or 1-day. you know, 6 to 8 or whatever you decide mm-hmm. on, right?
No, I think everything, all the ranges and times are perfect. And then you just kind of experiment and with some clients based on their industry, this will be a no-brainer for them. This won't even be a lot of money to them. Other clients, it will be a lot more. I have freelancers who reach out and they're like, can I get a session with you? And I'm like, here's the link for $350. It's 45 minutes. And that's a lot of money for them. And I get it, right? I've been there. So never be afraid if you just really want to help somebody.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to just say, well, like I've had, I did a naming session. That's a subset of like branding strategy. Someone wants help coming up with a name for a product or service or company, whatever. I think I may have mentioned this before. I did like a half day session for $300 because I cared about him.
Yeah.
His name is McLean. And I'm like, I just thought he was a sweet guy, wanted to help him get a start. I had people pour into me early in my career. So yeah. Like, if there are times you care about somebody and you would just really desire to help them, ask them what would help them have skin in the game and charge that, right? Because it'll still get you the testimonial.
I think it's the mindset thing where we're so used to giving it away that, you know, it has to be a reversal of thinking. Stop giving, you know, I like to give stuff away, yeah. But there is a point now to it.
Yeah.
Well, and also don't be afraid. So there's an in-between here, I think, too, right? Where for many clients, this is going to be like a one-time thing, you know, where, I mean, you might do several of these. And I know, Austin, you've done several with one client where you've done several strategy engagements. But because it's a one-time thing for many of them, don't be afraid to go in maybe at a kind of a lower fee than you think you should be charging, just so you can get a yes and get started. You know what I'm saying? Because when it's a one-time thing, it's not like they're going to hold you to it. It's not like a blog post. Oh, well, that's your rate. We got 87 other ones to write. No, right? You're not going to be stuck at that rate. So I would invite anyone who's maybe thinking, I don't know, I want to do this, but you know, what's the right pricing? And you're overthinking this. And I'm not saying you are, Deb, but I know this is very common.
Yeah.
Stop overthinking it. Come up with something that you're definitely comfortable with. Just quote that. Even if you think, oh, I wonder what Austin or Ed would say. Don't worry about us. Mm-hmm. Put it out there. Get a yes. Get started. Your confidence, just like my coaching client, she said, oh my God, I did this. I was so nervous. I did it. It went well. And now I'm so much more confident. I can't wait to do more of these. That's what you want. You're not going to get that if you don't get out there. So what's getting in your way? If pricing is, just go a little bit lower than you think. Who cares what anybody else thinks?
Mm-hmm.
Do it and get started.
Yeah. And that's so good, Ed. And I think it's so easy with freelancing to forget that most of us got into this to have more freedom and to enjoy our lives and to live, to not live to work, but to work to live, to have more space in our calendars and to work with people we think are cool on projects we think are cool. Right. And so it's been a delight for me over the years to do some of these sessions. No, it's not even like people are going to go around and tell how much they paid you, right? So if there's something that you think is cool, go do it. Help someone, right? If you see a younger version of yourself in this business owner, like help them, right? Yeah, I would say try to have fun with them too. No one's waiting for you to fail. All right, saying your fee in front of the mirror, matter of fact, can help. I love that, Nick. It's like a little bit of a play acting or role playing almost. That's good. Diane does it in the car. That's great. It's like, this is my safe place. Yeah, that's so good. I think we've covered everything.
Yeah. I want to make sure if you had another question and, you know, you didn't want to ask earlier, feel free. We got a few more minutes if you have something else. And I know, Diane, you jumped in a little bit later because you got a commitment at the regular time. So let us know if we can answer anything for you.
And I know Carmen's thinking some things over there.
You see the thought cloud?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got actually a lot going on. I got up my proposal and I use HoneyBooks, and getting a brochure to send off to a couple of people today, and hoping that I'll get a response pretty quick about their what I call my growth engine workshop to mark out for their marketing strategy.
Nice.
The one I swipe from Ryan Dice, Ryan D. Dice.
Yeah.
It's really a good process, and I think it's going to help them a lot. And now I got, actually, I picked up, Ed, I got your content marketing.
The multiplier. Package.
Uh-huh. And that's going to help me a lot with the client I'm working with now.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I can roll the content mark or the content strategy into a content marketing package for people,
mm-hmm.
using that framework. And that's going to help me a lot, because I have all this content for this one client that I was trying to manage. And now I've got a framework to use to put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really happy.
You bring up a really good point, Carmen, which is like, use other people's tools. Like Ryan Dice is putting this out there, and it's like, okay, take it and use it. I'm a part of a private Facebook group, and one of the guys in the group is a fractional CMO, the same way I am. He's like, hey, here's the growth strategy. And it's basically kind of like fill in the blank. And this is what I use when I'm starting with a new client. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is gold. I'm stealing this so fast. I'm not going to give you credit. No. Always give Ed credit. Don't give Ryan Dice credit. He doesn't need credit. But but anyway, I just love that. And like, everyone follow Carmen's examples. You know, example, find the other people's frameworks that you really like and that will make your life easier, and use them. Right. And I've encouraged you all to do that with this stuff in this program. Right. Use my stuff, improve upon it, throw out the parts you don't like. Okay, Stephanie has a question. If I'm doing a website strategy, would you suggest would you kind of push someone toward case studies in your strategy? It just kind of depends. Like, if you see that gap in their overall marketing and sales mix, I have always in my back pocket certain pet or favorite recommendations that I will make just to create that wow moment, right? And so, Stephanie, I think it's a good idea, if you know that you can write a good case study, to just offer them content strategy and then say, hey, what do you think about, you know, the first three articles we write actually being case studies that will help you sell more effectively over here too? And they're like, oh, that's a great idea. Why didn't we think of that? You're like, because I'm the pro. That's why you didn't think about it.
Well, let me add something to that real quick. We talked about lead dominoes last week and last week's call. Always have, and I want you to think about this for different applications or just in content marketing in general or editing for you, Bonnie, or whatever you end up doing, one or two lead dominoes in your toolbox. In other words, things that you know, hey, when in doubt, if I'm trying to get my bearings, or if I'm trying to figure out what to suggest as a starting point or something that almost always works,
mm-hmm.
have those in your back pocket, have them ready to go. So for my email marketing consulting work, there are two things that I know, hey, when in doubt, these are two areas for me to look at immediately, because 99.9% of the time, the client is going to have problems in that area, or they're not doing a good job. Mm-hmm. So it gets you going, you know, and sometimes that's what we need, right? We just need a kind of a good starting place. And it's not what we're really going to push. It's like, okay, let me start my analysis mm-hmm. here to see if there's a gold nugget mm-hmm. in here that I can uncover. So yeah, keep those in your back pocket, and you don't have to sell them to everybody, but that's just a starting point.
That's so good, Ed. It's like you're the band, and you don't, as the first song, once you come out on stage, play a deep cut.
Yeah.
You play the song that you know everyone loves, maybe one of the ones that made you famous, right? And so I'll show you something really fast. I already kind of mentioned that if a client already has content, one of my best hits or greatest hits is actually saying, before we just dive in to creating a bunch of new stuff for you, let's just do a little bit of cursory analysis on what you already have. So you can actually see that I came up with that aggregate score, right? And you'll also see that what the green, what I've highlighted here are their top 15 posts. And these are the ones that had, you know, the total engagement score was over 100. And that's just, you know, a sum of reactions, shares, comments. And I think this is on Facebook. Yeah. So you have those favorite moves that you can make right when you get started. And they may change based on the type of engagement. And I'll say this for Carmen, because I know that she does marketing plans. I have this simple exercise when I'm doing a marketing plan strategy engagement. Right? Knowing that the output is going to be a marketing plan they can actually use. I think I mentioned this somewhere. It's called the 20 stories exercise. And all I do is before we even get to the session, I have them fill out a spreadsheet. I'm like, how did you get your last 20 customers? Tell me the story about how each one found their way to you. And without fail, there are marketing strategies and marketing tactics sort of hidden in plain view in those stories that they're not actually, you know, optimizing. They're not maximizing those, right? Oh, it's like, oh yeah, like we have this one referral partner that's always sending us new business. And I'm like, when's the last time you took that person out to lunch or sent them a gift or whatever, right? So that is one of my, like, you know, that's the monster ballad I come out on stage singing if I'm doing a marketing engagement, right? Let's start with 20 stories exercise. And I'll also say that with workshops or strategy engagements where there's a very clear outcome, marketing plan, customer persona, content marketing strategy, whatever, I will try to engineer a couple of wow moments or big breakthrough moments for them, because that's what makes them think, oh man, this is totally worth it, right? So you can have those greatest hits. You sing that when you first get out on stage, but you also know that maybe there's an insight or two. I had a call yesterday. It was a kickoff call for a new consulting client. And I already went in knowing a couple of things I was going to say. I'm like, this is going to blow their mind. I'm ready. Right. So yeah, it can help sometimes if it makes you more comfortable to do a little bit of research about the client before the strategy session so that you can engineer those wow moments, go for it. Right. And this is just one other client experience thing that has been really effective for me. If I give them pre-work, hey, I need you to fill out this questionnaire. Hey, I need you to go through this 20 stories exercise. I'll often, depending on where they live, I'll find like the best local independent coffee shop and I'll send them a gift card. And I'm like, why don't you treat yourself to a coffee on me while you're filling out these questions or going through this exercise? And it's like $10, right? Like it's not much money, but they're like, that is so generous. I'm like, you just paid me thousands of dollars and you think I'm the generous one for giving you back $10. But it's those little moments that you can engineer that make people think, wow, that was a great experience. right? What's that mug, Stephanie? That mug had to do with something. I cannot interpret that. I'm sorry. My morning coffee is wearing off.
I was just saying, I was looking for the card. It wasn't in there.
Sorry. It's on its way. It is on its way for sure. Diane, it sounds like you had a win this week.
I did. I had in mind when we were doing our exercises, one particular client I wanted to sell strategy to. And we had our call, unfortunately, after I'd already listened to you guys, or before, I can't remember. I didn't get to talk to you guys before I had had him on the call. And I just mentioned that, that if he wanted us to continue to come up with different content for him, that I would really need to meet with him quarterly. Mm-hmm. He would do a 90-minute session every quarter. And I didn't tell him the price, but he said, I'm in. I want to do that. He's working with a service right now. The contract ends in December, and he's not going to renew with them because I got the feeling that he wasn't real happy with them. But they're doing his website, so he's waiting until his website is done, and then he's just not going to renew the contract with them. But yeah, he's all in. So I'm like, yay! I'm going to earn my money back that I paid for this course.
Congratulations, that's great.
That is the goal, right? And you bring up a good point, right? Which is, as you sell these, you can very easily parlay this offer that you've just created into a monthly subscription, right? So if Carmen is helping people with their marketing, there's no reason that she can't do a pre-scheduled marketing check-in where they look at the numbers together. They decide what they're going to do next. Which parts of the marketing plan are we going to iterate or remove or upgrade or otherwise change? And great, get after it. I'll see you next month. Right? So that's where these strategy engagements, if you have one-off engagements, naturally lend themselves to that sort of ongoing strategic relationship with certain clients. And then you can see the lifetime value of one strategy client go through the roof. I have a strategy client who's been with me since 2016. So, and like, he has spent what, 30 or 40K with me at this point. That's wonderful because I care about him. I care about his family. I care about his kids, met his wife, right? And it's like, it doesn't feel like work anymore. So just make sure you have that idea of a strategy subscription in the back of your minds.
You know, what I like about all of this is that I have decided that I'm going to have strategy be the entry point for all of my clients.
Yes.
For now on, because it just makes sense. Because I meet so many people in the area that I'm working in, they're providers of services, but they don't know how to market. They don't even know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they've hired somebody to do a piece of it, like the Facebook marketing, but there's no cohesive anything going on.
The further to the left you are, by the way, in that diagram, the more you should insist on that, Carmen, which it sounds like where you are. That diagram we went through earlier.
And like, here's the thing, Carmen. You will have people who are like, oh, we don't want to pay for that. And they'll leave. And you know what will happen? They'll come right on back, tails between their legs, having just wasted $2,000-$3,000 a month for 6 to 9 months on Instagram or whatever. And then they'll realize it wasn't cohesive. And then they'll come back and say, I think we need to do it the right way this time. You tell us how to start. So I have had those strategy clients who were not ready. They needed to go fail a little bit more without it. And then when they come back, now they're ready to be great clients.
So it's a really great filtering mechanism.
Yeah, can I just make a quick point? I've kind of pitched about 4 or 5 content strategy offers, and my initial impression, and they're to sort of mid-sized companies, a bit smaller than the ones I normally work for. My initial impression is that for a lot of companies, this is the first time they've thought about content as something that can be strategic. And so it takes about at least one call, maybe two, for them to get their heads around that, as we say in British English, and to sort of understand the concept. They're more familiar with, say, sales consultancy or IT consultancy. But when you start talking about brainstorming, road mapping for content, they think, hang on, but can't we just write it?
Yes, you're so true. We have to have a paradigm shift to sell strategy, and our clients have to have a paradigm shift to place a high value on it. Sometimes they'll come to us, they've already been through the paradigm shift, and they're really, really happy that you see the value in strategy too. And, you know, kind of like I said, sometimes they need to leave because they're not ready yet. But then, you know, they have enough content fumbled where we're like, we've got to try something different. And then they come back to you. And then when they come back to you, your prices are higher.
All right, guys. Well, I really appreciate everyone being so diligent about coming to these calls, coming in with questions, going through the material, and above all, putting yourself out there. Because if you learn this stuff and it makes you smarter, that's wonderful. But unfortunately, that's not going to keep the lights on. That's not going to give you a more fulfilling, free business. So I want you to feel really happy and proud of yourselves for doing what you have. And again, I can't stress this enough. If you haven't already, put offers out there. Put them out there. Honestly, it doesn't matter where you start. Look where Austin started. Very modest. And you just work your way up. You know, nothing can really go wrong. The worst thing that can happen is you get no or no answer. And that's all okay. We can all live with that. No lives are at stake. Okay. Nobody's going to die. So keep it up. Again, we're going to upload that that cheat sheet by tomorrow at session 6. And I wish you all the best. I'll turn it over to you, Austin, to close, but I just wanted to put that out there.
You all have been delightful. I mean, you know, at this point that I love talking about this stuff, but what makes it so fulfilling is just how smart you all are and capable. And I'm just excited to hear from you or notice on LinkedIn or wherever that you're out there doing this, because this is, I mean, it made all the difference for me and my family. And so, yeah, I would just say, go do it. Report back to us. You know, we covet your success stories, your testimonials. So, you know, please go make yourself a success story now, and then be sure to let us know. You all have been great.
Please do. Please let us know, guys. And you'll do great. I know you will. If you get yourself out there and you keep putting yourself out there, you will do great things. So thank you. We'll end it there. Thank you for all your kind words and comments. And I hope our paths will cross again here real soon. Take care, everybody.